Good morning. My focus is on a mechanism for health planning. That's what certificate of need means. It's a concept that is not always familiar in the public health field. Even in the Department of Health in all the states, we often don't understand how medical policies for medical care interact with the public health. It happens that 36 states have certificate of need laws, and this mechanism is an attempt to get public accountability for the way resources are used. The reason we're concerned about resources is that $800 billion in our healthcare system are non-productive or potentially preventable. So those resources, which would be very useful for some of the ideas that the previous presenters have been talking about, could benefit from utilizing those dollars. And my disclaimer is that I have been serving as a consultant to HRSA in the past year, and the focus there is how to take the experience of community health centers, which is a model for medical care, and extend it beyond the safety net. How to institutionalize, in a sense, the very interesting model that community health centers represent. You might think of this speculation in the same light as Nader's most recent book called Only the Super Rich Can Save Us. This is an example of, I think he calls it practical utopianism. Clarifying issues that could happen, and it's important to see what is possible so that we can develop strategies to get there. It was also stimulated by an article I read on the plane here by David Friedman on why so much of the empirical research in the medical journals is false. And we subsequently learned that from subsequent articles, and in a sense, much of the empirical, I'm not going to develop that argument, it's really worth looking at. But the argument that I am focusing on is a model of public accountability that links medical care with public health and other social determinants of health, all this taking place at a community level, and with health disparities being a major focus, partly because of the leverage of civil rights principles that could be incorporated into community health planning. Community health planning is a process that we used to invest in more in this country 30 and 40 years ago. When Reagan came in, the funding by the federal government for health systems agencies was eliminated. At the federal level. States were able to pick it up if they chose to. There are very few health systems agencies in the country right now, probably three or four, even though 36 states have a certificate of need process that those health systems agencies used to use in impacting decisions about expanding the capacity of the healthcare system. I want to say a few words about civil rights and then leave it for discussion later if you're interested. Civil rights has had a major impact on our healthcare delivery system. The 14th Amendment was used for challenging the separate but equal policy in Hill-Burton. And that happened in 1963, right after the courts recognized the 14th Amendment. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, particularly Title VI, was enacted. And as soon as Medicare came on the scene 2 years later in 1966, the Department of Health and Human Services said to the hospitals, if you want to receive Medicare dollars as a certificate of participation, you can no longer discriminate. So we had desegregation of our hospitals overnight, I mean within a year, but after over 100 years of of separate but equal. We also see the use of language accessibility as a recognized legal right, enforced actually in hospitals, not always in doctors' offices. But the point is that there is some recognition that there is a legal right to access health care. One could also look at this from a public health, in terms of public health ethics. And most of you in the room are probably more familiar with that. I came to this field through the disability community, and so civil rights and healthcare is how I approached it. There was a very important study in 1966 called Health is a Community Affair, which came out of a commission, the National Commission on Health, Community Health Services. It was chaired by Marion Folsom. He was Secretary of Health and Human Services under Eisenhower, very important business leader in Rochester, New York. That's the healthy community I'm going to be talking about. And he developed a patient care planning council that evolved into the first health systems agency in this country. There was a time in 1974 when the National Health Resource Development and Planning Act was passed, where the federal government funded through a formula 205 health systems agencies throughout the country. Every area of about 1 million people had a health systems agency. New York, because it was the largest state, had the most experience with health systems agencies. And New York City itself actually combined, since it had 8 million people, they had the most resources and did some very interesting things. Anyway, I will. What I want you to recognize is that this particular report was co-sponsored by APHA and the National Health Council. So there is some history to what I'm talking about. What is the problem that we're really addressing, though? Is it inefficiency in the healthcare system, or is it poor health status in the population? Because health status is a very important measure of many inequalities in our country. So even if we had an efficient healthcare delivery system, our health status would still be quite poor. And how we might want to address that, of course, was presented in several of the presentations we've heard already. There is an invisible divide between medical care and public health. And I think we need to make it more visible, and I think we need strategies for overcoming it. And I think that the certificate of need concept could be enhanced in ways that would do that. What changes are needed so that the total population can be served in a geographical area in the most efficient, effective, and equitable way? I'm a sociologist. I'm looking to institutionalize this process, not just rely on voluntary events that can happen when the right foundation comes and the right health organizer is there. In terms of inefficiencies in the medical care system, you saw in the healthcare debate how similar even opponents to healthcare reform admitted the same facts. An IOM report last year did a nice summary of the literature, and I thought identified the $800 billion nicely in terms of these five different categories. Unnecessary services, services that were not needed at all, inefficiently delivered services, excess administrative costs, prices that are too high, and missed prevention opportunities. Interestingly enough, the missed prevention opportunities, they had said was only about $55 billion because they were excluding the primary prevention opportunities that would be invested not from healthcare dollars, but in the social determinants of health that most of you are probably thinking about when you're thinking about housing and transportation and education and employment. Anyway, turns out that in healthcare in the United States, 60% of total healthcare expenditures are public dollars. So you'd think we would use some of that leverage if we had a democracy. And of course, the whole process here is figuring out how to democratize not only the government, but the way healthcare resources are distributed. We know from healthcare research that the supply of healthcare drives the demand and, of course, generates the healthcare costs. We call that Romer's Law, which you probably have heard about, and of course it's documented extensively through the Dartmouth Atlas, which uses Medicare data as our national data set to identify incredible variations, and variations of as much as 5 times in different regions in terms of the services that are provided to Medicare beneficiaries. Even though those differences in healthcare resource consumption is not associated with higher quality or better outcomes. A nice description of this from a journalistic form is Atul Gawande's analysis of one of the more expensive communities in the system, McAllen, Texas. Anyway, where should we be putting our money? Should we be putting it more into health care, more into primary care, more into specialty care, more into tertiary care, or should we be putting more into public health and social determinants? McGinnis's work on this in terms of identifying the behavioral determinants of poor health, I think opened up some very interesting questions. But I was really attracted to Larry Edelman's work, who is the executive producer of the documentary Unnatural Causes that have been talked about, that diet and exercise are important, but the neighborhood is more important because the neighborhood influences all of the social determinants of health that Georgia mentioned before. So what strategies can we use for addressing health from a systemic point of view in a geographical area like a community or a region? Well, once you've identified the social determinants of health that are missing in the communities with the poorest health, you recognize that those communities have the least resources or the least power. So what do you do about that besides a PowerPoint? Well, WHO, of course, has made many recommendations about taking social determinants of health into account, but they don't provide the resources. And in fact, they don't even confront the political determinants of health, which prevent those resources from going to the communities that need them the most. All right, so this is what we basically have. Health outcomes are influenced by medical care. Yes, medical care makes a difference, a smaller difference than social determinants of health. So what is the challenge? The challenge is how to reduce the inefficiencies in health care delivery so that you can capture the surplus and redirect it to right-sizing the healthcare delivery system and addressing the social determinants of health, including public health. Now, that sounds like a nice agenda if you could pull it off, not only in 15 minutes, even 15 years would be fine. So how do you apply the principles that the community health centers represent to the healthcare system beyond the safety net? Well, those community health centers started in the 1960s when we had a strong civil rights movement. They still exist now and frankly have been expanded in some very interesting ways recently in healthcare reform. They use community-directed boards of directors for more local determination of priorities. They do address, well, there are examples of where social determinants of health have been addressed by community health centers. I loved hearing Jack Geiger talk about patients coming to him with malnutrition, and so he would take out his prescription pen and write groceries on a prescription pad. And then when he got in trouble for that, he said, you know what, we're going to use the resources of the community health center to organize agricultural cooperatives. These people live in Mississippi. He did this in one of the earlier community health centers in Mount Bayou, Mississippi. And so he organized an agricultural cooperative which served the problem of employment and the problem of lack of food. Zero time. Hey. Okay. If we don't do community health planning in a publicly accountable way, we are going to probably find ACOs doing it for us. That's part of the appeal of ACOs. And I think we need to figure out how to revitalize the HSA system, which I really haven't described to you yet. So this particular strategy, I mean, this is where we are now. Fragmented marketplace with perverse incentives resulting in overserving certain populations, underserving other populations. We could go to an idealized HSA CON, which I haven't described to you, but it is a democratically accountable community system. They did pull it off in a place like Rochester, and they pulled it off because they actually had employers having an incentive to rationalize the system. Marion Folsom, as one of the leaders of Kodak, was the biggest employer in the community. He knew that he was going to be picking up the costs of the healthcare system if it expanded, you see, in irrational ways. So he used that pressure, organizing the employers through the health systems agency, although it wasn't called that at the time, to restrain the growth of the healthcare delivery system. As a result, Rochester had the most efficient healthcare delivery system for a long time. That system has evolved in a more, has evolved from not just capacity management, but to community engagement, and now is mobilizing communities very much the way Karen was describing to do healthcare planning, and they have been able to efficiently do that. And I won't tell you about Vermont, but that's, anyway, I'm gonna say one last word. Certificate of need is a thing that a hospital has to pass in order to get a license. And if they don't pass that, they're not able to come into being. So it looks like it interferes with competition. And from a capitalist point of view, interfering with competition means you're raising costs and you're creating barriers to entry from competitors, you see, who can improve quality. The alternative is to look at CON as a way of avoiding overcapacity and also increasing the volume that the existing providers do so that they can specialize, and highlighting the unmet needs. And as I'm finishing, saying that the mobilization of the community in the way that Karen was describing could be institutionalized through an enhanced certificate of need process. I apologize for the length of this. The overheads will give you more of the detail that I can't say now. Thank you.